ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ ॐ Welcome back. We continue our study, our weekly class on the Bhagavad Gita. We continue today in chapter 3, and we'll begin, as always, with some brief recitation. We'll start with verse 9. As always, please glance at the translation and then repeat after me.
Yajñārthāt karmano nyatra Yajñārthāt karmano nyatra Lokoyam karma bandhanah Lokoyam karma bandhanah Tarartham karma kaunteya Tarartham karma kaunteya Mukta sangah samachara Mukta sangah samachara Sahayagnya praja srishtva Sahayagnya praja srishtva Purovacha prajapatihi Purovacha prajapatihi Anena prasavishyadvam Anena prasavishyadvam Eshavo swishta kamaduka, Eshavo swishta kamaduka, Devan bhavayata nena, Devan bhavayata nena, Te deva bhavayantu vaha, Te deva bhavayantu vaha, Parasparam bhavayantaha, Parasparam bhavayantah Shreyah paramavapsyatha Shreyas paramavapsyatha Ishtan bhogan hi vo deva Ishtan bhogan hi vo deva Dasyante yajna bhavitah Dasyante yajna bhavitah Tardattana pradayaibhyo Yo bhunkte stena hevasaha Yo bhunkte stena hevasaha Yajna shishtashina santo Yajna shishtashina santo Muchyante sarva kilbishaihi Muchyante sarva kilbishaihi Bhunjate te twagham papa Bhunjate te twagham papa Ye pachantyatma karanata Ye pachantyatma karanata Annad bhavanti bhutani Annad bhavanti bhutani Parjanyaranna sambhavaha Parjanyaranna sambhavaha Yajnat bhavati parjanyo Yajnat bhavati parjanyo Yajnah karma samudbhavaha Yajnah karma samudbhavaha Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi Brahmakshara samudbhavam Brahmakshara samudbhavam Tasmat sarvagatam brahma Tasmat sarvagatam brahma Nityam yajne pratishtitam Nityam yajne pratishtitam That's a good place to stop. And we'll return to where we left off here. So we had finished verse 8.
in the prior class, and I had just begun to introduce verse 9. And with verse 9, we get a new topic, a new aspect of Karma Yoga. You will recall in the prior class, the earlier portion of chapter 3 being the chapter on Karma Yoga, earlier Sri Krishna was, we just saw a section where Sri Krishna was highly critical of what he called hypocritical sannyasis. Who is a hypocritical sannyasi? Someone who takes sannyasa, that is someone who renounces worldly activities, and then continues to be engaged in worldly actions. I gave that story of the Mauni Baba, the sannyasi who was practicing silence, took a vow of silence. He went and lived in a cave for 10 years, and I told you the story. When I saw him, he was reading a newspaper. So reading a newspaper in a cave, just as, to me, that's the epitome of irony. You go to the cave to escape the world, and then in a newspaper you take the world with you into that cave. Anyway, we saw in quite some depth Sri Krishna's criticism. Sannyasa, he doesn't criticize. True sannyasa is when you are focused exclusively on spiritual practice, and to the extent that you're not available for worldly interaction. In fact, that's the reason that sannyasis are, you know, just an interesting observation, sannyasis are unmarried for a very good reason, and that is someone who is so dedicated to spiritual pursuit would make a really poor spouse. If it was a man, you'd expect that sannyasi to go off and earn a living, but he'd be too busy studying. If it was a female sannyasi, sannyasini, you'd expect her to be perhaps preparing meals, but again, she'd be too busy engaged in spiritual pursuit to take care of these household duties. So for a very pragmatic reason, sannyasis remain unmarried, free from worldly responsibilities, so they can be devoted exclusively to spiritual pursuit. That fellow reading the newspaper in the cave, reading the newspaper is not the same as reading scriptures. Okay, we discussed that quite enough. So here, and then Sri Krishna concludes, and let me just finish that idea off, and that is, if you're going to be engaged in any activities at all, whether you are a sannyasi, a monk, or a householder, those activities had better be done with the attitude of Karma Yoga. And that applies to the sannyasi as much as it does the householder. If the sannyasi does the act, the karma, of going out to collect alms, to beg for food, that sannyasi had better collect alms with the attitude of Karma Yoga, which is to say that sannyasi had better not have expectations for having good food or for having an adequate quantity of food. That sannyasi better have the attitude that everything comes from Ishvara. He is the nimitta, he is the agent of action. He can beg for food, but whatever food comes to him comes through Ishvara as the karma pala data, as the giver of fruits of action. So whether you are a sannyasi, a monk, or a householder, having the attitude of Karma Yoga towards all your activities is crucial for spiritual growth. With that in mind, Sri Krishna begins in verse 9, which we'll see again. He begins to describe another aspect of Karma Yoga that was not discussed in chapter 2. In chapter 2, Karma Yoga was introduced. And here in chapter 3, we see it developed further with another aspect, the aspect which I described, I put up on the board last week, the aspect called Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. Here, buddhi means attitude, the attitude of arpana, offering unto Ishvara, unto God. So Ishvara Arpana Buddhi is another aspect of Karma Yoga, which we're going to see explained here, in which you offer all your actions to God. How will you do that is going to be explained here. So what does it mean to offer your actions? Or often it's said you dedicate your actions to God. What does it mean to offer your actions or to dedicate your actions to God? Sri Krishna will explain this in the coming sequence of verses. Oh, we'll pick up the thread with verse 9. Yajñārthāt karmanon yatra, yajñārthāt karmanon yatra, lokoyam karma bandhanah, lokoyam karma bandhanah, tarartham karma kaunteya, tarartham karma kaunteya, muktasangah samachara, muktasangah samachara. Yajñārthāt, yajña. In fact, just as a general introduction here, yajña is a ritual. In fact, yajna is the Vedic word that's used for the rituals we now call homa in North India and homam. I'm sorry, havan in North India and homam in South India. These are rituals in which a fire is employed in the worship of Ishvara. And yajna is often translated as sacrifice, because what's unique about yajna is that offerings are made into the fire, and that is your sacrifice. You are sacrificing. Often this ghee, this clarified butter, is offered into the fire, and that is an act of sacrifice. That ghee, by the way, in ancient times, that ghee was quite costly to milk a lot of cows, and to extract the ghee from all that milk was a lot of work. Therefore, ghee was costly. Ghee was also considered of extreme value back then. In fact, so often they'll say that ghee is amritam. Amritam means the nectar of immortality. So in their view, drinking ghee was the best thing for your health. Of course, today we're very aware of the problem of cholesterol and heart disease, so we may not consider it such today. We have too much fat and oil in our diet, many of us. But in ancient times, the problem was the opposite. They didn't have enough fats and oils in their diet. So for that reason, ghee, the oil that's extracted from butter, was considered extremely valuable. So you are offering something of great value, something of that was costly, that was produced with great effort, and you're offering it into the fire. So that is sacrifice. And that sacrifice now is symbolic of this attitude of Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, this attitude of dedicating or offering your actions to God. You are, just as the ghee is something valuable, you give, you offer to Ishvara through the means of this fire. By the way, you know the symbolism of that fire, right? Since it's a primary symbol all the way through this section, let's make sure that we understand the symbolism of yajna. Many people wrongly think that yajna is worship of Agni, Agni meaning the god of fire, and that's absolutely incorrect, because you could be worshiping Shiva by means of that fire, or Indra by means of that fire, or Devi, goddess, by means of that fire. That fire is an instrument of worship, of worshiping any of the gods, and not necessarily Agni. So let's be very clear. In fact, the mechanism is that whatever you offer into that fire is consumed by the flames. the flames carry that offering upwards symbolically, conveying your offering to the gods. Not that the gods are only up, but symbolically. The offering is consumed and carried upwards by the flames. So the flames are very instrumental in conveying your offering. In fact, the Agni is often called a Purohit, a priest. The very famous first verse of the Rig Veda refers to Agni as a priest. Om Agni Mihi De Purohitam Ide. I worship Agnim, Agni who is Purohitam. You don't need to know a lot of Sanskrit to get that. You know, Purohit or Purohitam here means priest. So Agni is worshipped in that very first verse of the Rig Veda. Agni is worshipped and acknowledged as the priest, and priest is one who conveys offerings to God. If you hire a priest to do a ritual for you, and the priest makes you sit there and you do this long, elaborate ritual, tell me, who gets the blessings from the ritual? The priest or you? You get the point. The priest is an instrument for you to receive blessings. And in the case of yajna, that fire, Agni, is better understood as an instrument. It's a means through which your offerings are given to God. So with that in mind, we're going to use that yajna symbolism through this whole section. So just wanted to be sure that the symbolism is very clear. So with that in mind, to dedicate or offer your deeds to God, this aspect of karma yoga we're calling Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, is compared here to a yajna, a sacrifice. So just as you offer this valuable ghee into the flames of the fire, in the same way you offer your daily deeds unto Ishvara. And how that's done is going to be explained as we continue. Let's see this first verse here. It says, in the second line, Loko yam, ayam lokaha, this world, all the people in this world are karma bandhanaha. They are bound, bandhana. They suffer from the bondage of karma. And the bondage of karma means that your deeds will result in later results. Later results, if you collect enough, if you perform enough so-called bad deeds, harmful deeds would be a better way to describe them. If you perform these papa karmas, these harmful deeds, if you perform enough, in theory, your next life can be in hell. It can result in going to hell. This is a kind of bondage. Also bondage to being reborn again and again and again. Even good karmas will cause you to get reborn. So don't think that only bad karmas are the problem. Even good karmas lead to rebirth. And if you ask, why is rebirth a problem? Every time you're born, you have some pleasure perhaps, but some suffering most certainly, and it prevents you from remaining in a state of non-separateness from Brahman, from being merged into Brahman, from being vast and limitless and utterly free from worldly suffering. That's the goal we call moksha. So this idea of bondage is that by committing karmas, you get born again and again and again, and that continual cycle of birth and rebirth then prevents you from remaining in a state in which you are merged with the Supreme Being, the Absolute Brahman. So, ayam lokaha, all the people in this world, are karma bandhanaha, are bound by karma, anyatra, except for karmanaha, except for those karmas which are yajñartat, yajña artha, those karmas which are done, artha, which are done for the sake of yajña. So except for karmas performed as a yajña, as an offering to God, ayam lokaha, all the people in the world, are bound by these karmas. And this is a very interesting teaching, because what Sri Krishna is saying here is that the intention of your action is just as important as the action itself. It is not just the deed that counts, but it is the intention of the deed that often counts. Let me give an example I've given many times before. If you're walking outside and you accidentally step on a bug, and you crush the bug, you kill the bug. So the deed, the action, was to kill a living creature. Now, it's only a bug, but it is an act of killing. But when you do it accidentally, there's no intention to kill the bug. And because there's no intention to kill the bug, that intention is as important as the deed. And technically speaking, that act of killing incurs no sinful karma at all because of the absence of the intention to kill. So intention is quite important. On the other hand, if a bug is crawling along, and you decide to smash that bug, there's definitely intention there. Again, it's just a bug, so it's not like killing a cow or killing a human being, but it is an act of killing, and that act of killing is quite intentional. And since it's intentional, that intention counts along with the deed, so that intentional act of killing does bring with it some karmic demerit, so to speak, papa karma. So there is a karmic consequence for that intentional act of killing the bug and not for the accidental killing of a bug. Intention counts. And isn't that the idea behind karma yoga in general? What is the intention for the actions you're doing? In the biggest sense, karma yoga is an antidote. Karma yoga is an antidote to the conventional intention with which we do karmas. The conventional intention, as we've discussed before, is raga dvesha. Raga, you want to get what you want. Dvesha, you want to avoid what you don't want. That raga and dvesha drives all conventional behavior and serves as a fundamental intention. Get what I want, avoid what I don't want. And what karma yoga does, first and foremost, is to replace that conventional intention, raga and dvesha, to replace it with a variety of attitudes, not just one. We've discussed several already, including to understand that whenever you do an action, you are merely the agent of action. You have no control over the result. The result comes from Ishvara, God. So immediately you have a prayerful attitude towards that action. And prayer is any act of being related to God. So if you do an action recognizing Ishvara as the karma phala data, the giver of the fruits of action, that action is prayer. Washing the dishes after dinner is an act of prayer when you recognize that, when you recognize Ishvara's presence in that action. Because of Ishvara, you have dishes to wash. Because of Ishvara, you have the ability to wash. These are all Ishvara's blessings. And let me just finish this idea. The most basic way in which karma yoga shifts your intention towards action. I just gave the example of understanding Ishvara as karma pala datta, but the most fundamental shift of attitude we discussed several classes ago, the most fundamental shift of intention is, instead of acting for the sake of the limited worldly results, you act instead as a form of spiritual practice in which will eventually lead you to gain perfect peace and lasting contentment. This is that discernment we spoke about at such length, to understand that no amount of worldly action can ever produce perfect peace and lasting contentment. And with that discernment, with that understanding, your whole motivation gets shifted, your intention gets shifted. So instead of acting for limited worldly results, your actions become part of a spiritual practice which can culminate in spiritual growth and moksha. Now, I distracted myself so completely, I have to pick up the thread here. So here, the shift of intention, that's where we left and that's where we're coming back. Shift of intention. Here, the shift of intention is the attitude of dedicating your actions to Ishvara. And what is that? Let's be very specific. What does it mean to dedicate your actions to Ishvara? Remember the joke I told in the last class. If a pious Hindu, I can't say pious, if there's such a thing as a Hindu bank robber who opens a door to a bank and utters the words Krishnarpanam Astu, often uttered. It's a prayer. May this be an offering unto Krishna. If that Hindu utters Krishnarpanam Astu as he opens a door and robs a bank, that most certainly is not dedicating, in spite of the prayer. I offer this deed to Ishvara. It's not merely a prayer. It's not merely words. It's intention. So what does it mean in terms of your intention to dedicate an action to Ishvara? And I mentioned that in a prior class. I'll remind you right now. It's important. It's central to this whole discussion. We generally, our intentions are generally selfish, right? So raga and dvesha is really of a selfish kind of intention. Raga means I want something for me. Dvesha means I want something, I want to avoid something to avoid my pain and discomfort. So this raga and dvesha is fundamentally self-oriented. Selfish is not the right word. Self-directed, self-oriented. Because even when you take care of your family, taking care of your family is not selfish, but it is self-oriented. Why is it self-oriented? It's your family. You're not taking care of somebody else's family. So that sense of self-orientation is present even when you take care of your family. That's not selfishness, but it is being self-oriented. And this is human nature, absolutely human nature. It's wired into us. So here, the shift of orientation is to set aside, and here's the attitude of sacrifice. The sacrifice here is to set aside your self-oriented agenda and follow Dharma instead. Raga might mean I want, give a silly example. Raga might mean I want ice cream. Well, for example, I'm having a problem managing my weight, and if I eat a lot of ice cream, that's actually harmful to this body. This body. This body is ultimately not my body. Ultimately, this body belongs to Ishvara. So, to set aside my selfish agenda, I want ice cream, and instead to sacrifice ice cream, so to speak, and follow Dharma, not eating the ice cream, taking care of this body which is an instrument of Ishvara, this is an example of sacrifice. Whenever you set aside your own self-oriented agenda and follow for the sake of following Dharma, that is sacrifice. That is Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. That's what it means to offer your deeds to God, to dedicate your deeds. It is to set aside your individual agenda and follow Dharma. Do whatever needs to be done. So, and that's what Sri Krishna says in the second half. Tadartam karma kaunteya, kaunteya o Arjuna, o son of Kunti. Karma samachara, in the last line, karma samachara, you should perform karma samachara, you should perform karma correctly, well. And how should tarartam, for this purpose, tarartam, for this purpose, or with this intention? What intention? That word tadartham connects to yajñārtha up on the first line. So tadartha yajñārtha, you should do your deeds, tadartha, with the attitude of sacrifice, mukta sangaha, being free from attachment. So giving up attachment. For me, it's giving up attachment to ice cream. So giving up attachment and setting your own agenda aside for the sake of following Dharma, that is dedicating your actions to Ishvara. All right. Then, saha yajna praja srishtva, saha yajna praja srishtva, puro vacha prajapatihi, puro vacha prajapatihi, anena prasavishyadvam, anena prasavishyadvam, eshavo swishta kamadhuka, eshavo swishta kamadhuka. Now, the section that comes here elaborates on this metaphor of yajna, the fire ritual offering, making ritual offerings into a fire. And in order for this to be meaningful, we have, I think, one, two, three, at least four verses here, all based on this metaphor. So let's understand how yajna was considered in ancient times. Remember, in ancient times, the laws of nature were not properly understood. In fact, everything was instead of understanding laws of nature, they thought that the rains came because you prayed to God, and not just God in general, but the specific gods that govern the rain. So that this idea of, they called it Adhishtana Devata, a devata, a deity, which is Adhishtana, the deity which abides in a particular locus, which is a very awkward but literal translation, Adhishtana Devata. But a looser but more meaningful translation is a deity who is in control of a certain aspect of the world. So you know this, that in ancient times they thought that the sun went up. It was Surya Dev. The moon went through its cycles. That's Chandrama. They were looked upon as deities. The rains fell because of other deities. Children were born according to the intervention of certain deities. Why did some couples get pregnant and others not? They didn't know anything about infertility thousands of years ago. It was all attributed to the gods, to the deities. With that in mind, you can understand how important yajna was in ancient times. And that is, if you want the rains to come on time, if you're a farmer with your crops planted, you better worship the right deities and make the right offerings into that ritual fire to propitiate. That's a word that's often used. You propitiate the gods. You please the gods by making these offerings. And if you do not propitiate the gods, if you don't please the gods, then the rains don't fall and your crops fail. Now, definitely this is not our modern post-scientific worldview. But if we want to understand Sri Krishna's teachings here in the next several verses, we had better understand it the way they understood it. So the way they understood it was that yajna, just making offerings into a ritual fire, was crucial to propitiate the gods, what we now call laws of nature, so that everything unfolds in a desirable way in terms of your worldly activities. So with that in mind, Sri Krishna goes back to the very origins of this concept of yajna. Sri Krishna says that, in the second line, Prajapati. Prajapati here means Brahmaji, God as creator. Prajapatihi, God as creator, Brahmaji, Pura Uvacha, in the second line, Pura, long ago, Uvacha, he said, Srishtva, after creating Prajaha, after creating all the people, Saha Yajnaha, along with rituals. So here the idea is that Brahmaji created all people, created the world, and along with this concept that the deities, laws of nature, need to be propitiated by means of yajna. So that's what this word here, saha yajna. People were created along with this, you know, to put it in more modern terms, a responsibility to enter into a relationship with nature and give something back. This is significant today because, you know, in modern times we can see the consequences of taking from nature and not giving anything back. We are causing the degradation of our environment, of the air and waters and land. We are causing the degradation because we constantly take from nature without giving anything back. Well, that's the modern way of looking at it. The ancient way of looking at it is to take the fruits of nature without performing yajna. That's the ancient way. So keep that in mind as we continue. But you can see the modern relevance. In ancient times, it was focused on yajna, the need to propitiate the gods through fire rituals. But in modern times, the idea is we have to give something back to nature. We have to recognize our responsibility to care for nature. So this would be the modern way of looking at it. So first half of the verse says that Brahmaji, having created the people of the world along with this responsibility to perform yajna, ancient worldview, to take care of the environment, modern worldview. You see the two ideas? So Brahmaji created us saha yajnaha, and that's the key word here, along with yajna. So in ancient times, it means that Brahmaji created us with the responsibility to propitiate the gods through yajna, and the modern version is Brahmaji created us with a responsibility to take care of nature. And that Brahmaji, Prajapatihi Uvacha, he said, Pura, long ago, what did he say? And what follows is actually out of Brahmaji's mouth. This is a direct quotation. Brahmaji said, Anena, by this yajna, by these acts of ritual sacrifice, Prasavishyadvam, you will be fruitful, you will multiply, you will be nourished, you will be cared for by doing this yajna, by propitiating the gods, by being responsible for nature. In our modern worldview, you will thrive. Eshaha vaha astu ishtakamadhuka. You have to break all those words apart. Vaha astu ishtakamadhuka. Eshaha, this performance of yajna. Vaha, for all of you, astu, may it be. Ishtakamadhuk, may it be that which fulfills your wishes. So he is saying that by performing rituals, by performing these yajnas, your desires will be fulfilled, you will be nurtured, you will thrive by performing these rituals. In modern terms, you will thrive by taking care of the world in which we live. So how does this work? And now he gives some details. Brahmaji himself gives some details about how this works. He says, Devan bhavayatanena, Devan bhavayatanena, Te deva bhavayantuvaha, Te deva bhavayantuvaha, Parasparam bhavayantaha, Parasparam bhavayantaha, Shreya paramavapsyatha, Shreya paramavapsyatha. So Brahmaji says, Pura, at the beginning of creation, what did he say? At the end of the first line, you have to break the words apart, anena, by this sacrifice, by this yajna, anena bhavayata, by your act of propitiating, bhavayata bhavayata. It's a causal imperative verb for our Sanskrit students. He says bhavayata, you should propitiate devan, the gods, anena, by this yajna, by this sacrifice, you should go on propitiating the gods. And in the second line, te devaha, and in return, those gods, bhavayantu, will propitiate, will please. Propitiate is a fancy word for please, but it's used in the sense of rituals. So te devaha, those gods, bhavayantu, will propitiate, will please, will nurture and take care of, vaha, for you, those gods will propitiate you. So you make offerings unto the gods, and the gods will take care of you. That's a paraphrase of the first half. Parasparam bhavayantaha, and by parasparam, mutually, reciprocally, bhavayantaha, taking care of each other. You take care of the gods by making the offerings into the fire, and those gods respond by taking care of you. And in this way, shreyas, the best condition of your life, param shreyas, the ultimate welfare for you and your families, avapsyata, you will gain param shreyas, the highest good, by in this way. So you see the mutuality. You make offerings unto the gods, and the gods take care of you. Now, remember, this is the ancient worldview. The modern worldview is to take from nature with respect, knowing that if we fail to take care of nature, nature will not be able to take care of us. So, and then further, we can put a religious dimension on it very easily by recognizing that the whole universe is an expression of Ishvara. In fact, many times the universe is looked upon as Ishvara's physical body. Ishvara is not a human being. If Ishvara has a physical body, this world is Ishvara's physical body. In fact, there are beautiful poems that say that the sun is his right eye, the moon is his left eye, and his belly is the physical world, or the feet, it's said in different ways. The point here is that we understand, we can understand this world as a physical manifestation of Ishvara. Many times we treat the world as Bhudevi, as goddess in the form of the planet Earth. So we have this devotional relationship with this planet. And if we truly have a devotional planet, if this planet is a manifestation of divinity, who are we to defile the air with pollution, to defile the waters with pollution, to chop down all the trees? In fact, I'm smiling just remembering there's one poem that says the trees are like the hair on Ishvara's body. So So then when we chop down the trees, that's the equivalent of chopping off Ishvara's hair, so to speak, which would be considered really disrespectful. You get the idea. So this, in ancient times, they had this idea of mutuality. You take care of the gods who rule over the earth, and those gods will take care of you. But in modern times, we can certainly have a sense of devotion for this planet on which we live. And Sri Krishna continues, Ishtan bhogan hi vo deva, Ishtan bhogan hi vo deva, Dasyante yajna bhavitaha, Dasyante yajna bhavitaha, Tardattana pradayaibhyo, Tardattana pradayaibhyo, Yo bhunkte stena heva saha, Yo bhunkte stena heva saha. Brahmaji's quotation is over, so now it is Sri Krishna's words we see here. Sri Krishna says, he indeed, in the first line, Devah at the end, those gods who are in the second line, Yajna Bhavitaha, those gods who are Bhavitaha, propitiated through Yajna, those gods who have received sacrificial offerings through Yajna, what about those gods? Dasyante, they will give, now back up to the first line, they will give, voasvaha, they will give you, they will give you what? Ishtan bhogan, they will give you the pleasures that you desire. Ishta, desired, bhoga, pleasures. So those gods, when propitiated, will, when propitiated specifically by making offerings into a ritual fire, those gods will ensure that your needs are taken care of, that you will enjoy the desired things in life. In modern times, I guess, if we look at from a modern perspective, recognizing the essential divinity of this planet on which we live, if we take care of this planet will continue to take care of us. There's actually a good modern example. Some of you know that the refrigerant used in freezers and refrigerators, a chemical called Freon, was actually being released into the environment and was going up into the upper atmosphere, and it was causing a degeneration of the atmosphere in such a way that it would allow more ultraviolet light beams, light rays, to come into the earth. Ultraviolet light is blocked by this, what is the term for it? Not stratosphere, I forget the technical term for the, I think the ionized layer in the upper atmosphere, there's a term for it, I'm sorry, it escapes my mind, many of you know. This ionized layer of the atmosphere, or some layer of the upper atmosphere, repelled the ultraviolet light rays. Those ultraviolet light rays are what cause burning of the skin and skin cancer. In fact, if it weren't for that ultraviolet rejecting layer of our upper atmosphere, we would all be subject to terrible skin cancer. This Freon, you might remember this is several decades ago, the Freon was being released and was destroying that layer of the atmosphere, and all the countries in the world, throughout the world, banned the use of that particular refrigerant, Freon. And the reason I'm boring you with all these details is that the atmosphere has repaired itself. We stopped poisoning the atmosphere with Freon, and the atmosphere repaired itself. That's the idea. If we take care of the planet takes care of us. Planet meaning Bhudevi, goddess. And conversely, if we fail to take care of the planet, we suffer as a result. So Sri Krishna says here in the second line, oh, this is interesting. Taihi dattan apradayebhyaha yo bhunkte stenaha evasaha. Yo bhunkte, one who enjoys. Taihi dattan in the third line. One who enjoys dattan, the desired pleasures, it's a referral to the first line, tai dattan, those things that were given. What things were given by the gods? Ishtan bhogan, desired pleasures. So taihi bhogan, those desired pleasures which were given by the gods, yaha bhunkte, one who enjoys those pleasures, apradayai byaha, one who enjoys, without making offerings unto the gods, apradayabhyaha, without making sacrificial offerings, one who enjoys what the gods give without making sacrificial offerings, saha stenaha eva, such a person, saha, is a stenaha, a thief, indeed. Such a person is a thief who enjoys what the gods grant without giving anything back by means of ritual, making offerings into a ritual. To put it in modern terms, if we take the riches of the world, the riches of this divinity on which we live, Bhudevi, we'll call it Goddess Earth, Mother Earth. If we take the riches of the earth without giving anything back, we're no better than thieves. This is very pertinent if we put it in those terms. The strong word that's used, to rape the earth. It's a very strong expression, but it's often been used. To rape the earth, to rob Mother Earth of her riches without taking care of this earth in return, turns us into thieves, or worse. So Sri Krishna uses this very harsh language here. On the other hand, we've got one more similar metaphor given in the next verse. We'll see this. One more verse. We'll see.
Yajna-shishtashina-santo, mujyante-sarva-kilbishaihi, bhunjate-te-twagham-papa, te-pachantyatma-karanat, te-pachantyatma-karanata.
So we're talking about this Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. So you can see it in terms of this yajna, this attitude of yajna, but I'm also giving it in modern terms. So Ishvara Arpana Buddhi means if we receive blessings from Ishvara in terms of nature, if we receive rains, which make the crops grow, if we receive sun without the ultraviolet light that makes our skin burn, if we receive the benefits of living on this beautiful planet, then we should receive all of that with gratitude and give something back. To give back means, as a minimum, don't cause harm, don't cause damage, or even in a more positive sense, do something good for this planet. Plant more trees would be a very good example. To plant trees is to give something back. So here we see one more similar metaphor here. Yajna shishta ashinaha santaha. So that yajna ritual, there were many offerings made. Also offerings of food were made. And that food was not necessarily thrown in the fire, but the food was symbolically offered to Ishvara. We do this today. Whenever we perform puja, in the performance of puja, modern worship, we take a plate of food, we bring that plate of food to the altar, we offer that food to Ishvara, and then having offered that plate of food, at the end of the ritual, that food is taken as prasada, as a sanctified gift from God. So this idea was also present in ancient times, even though they didn't perform puja, perhaps, as we do today. The same idea, yajna shishta ashinaha santaha. Santaha, those people who were ashinaha, those people who ate, yajna shishta. Shishta, leftover. Leftover from the yajna, whatever was offered at the yajna, that which was left over at the end of the ritual. So the food that is offered to God through this yajna, through this fire ritual, or through this puja, you know, it's in many, let me just say, in many households, pious Hindu households, even today, the mother, having cooked the meal, will take some of that food to the altar in the house and will offer that food to Ishvara before she serves it to her family. By doing that, what she serves to her family is sanctified. It is now prasada. It is now a gift of God. It is ritually purified, having been offered to God. And that's what's being described by here. Described here is yajna shishtashinaha santaha. Those people who partake of food that has been offered to Ishvara through some kind of ritual sacrifice, those people, muchyante, are freed, sarva kilbishaihi, from all sins. There's a concept that food might contain some kind of sinful taint. I'm not sure how, if the food was produced, well, gosh. A good example is in the production of milk, and many people drink milk. I don't drink milk anymore, but there's nothing wrong with drinking milk except for the fact that in the production of milk, cows are mistreated almost always. In the commercial production of milk, cows are mistreated. So the idea here then is that the milk, because cows were mistreated in the production of that milk has some papa associated with it, some sinful taint associated with that milk. But the idea here is if that milk, before it's consumed, if that milk is ritually purified, sanctified by offering it in a ritual, by offering it through puja, offering it at the altar, by offering it in yajna, symbolically offering it to God through the Father, through the fire, that food becomes ritually purified. And in this way, muchyante, those people who partake of such food, are muchyante, they are freed, sarva kilvishaihi, they are freed from all sins by partaking of this sanctified food. On the other hand, in the middle of the second line, you see, tu agham. Agha is sin. And the word tu is a crucial word here. Tu, on the other hand, tu, on the other hand, te, those who, bhunjate, those who enjoy that food, and in the last line, ye, those who pachanti, those who cook the food, atmakaranat, for their own selfish needs, ye, those who pachanti, cook food, atmakaranat, only for themselves, means without offering that food in puja or yajna, without offering that food to God, those people, te, back up in the second line, let me put the words together a little bit more nicely. Te bhunjate, they eat agham. They eat sin. Nice language. Te papaha, those sinners, agham bhunjate, those sinners consume sin. The idea here is when we take food irresponsibly ignoring its source, without a sense of gratitude, without gratitude to the God of the cosmos who provides the food we eat, if we eat the food, Sri Krishna says, cooking it for our own purpose, for our own needs, without offering, and without offering the food means perhaps by analogy, without offering the food metaphorically means without acknowledging Ishvara as the source of the food. To take food without a prayer of gratitude for the food we receive, Sri Krishna says, those who irresponsibly cook and eat food without acknowledging the source, without offering a prayer of gratitude, those people aghambhunjate, those people literally consume sin. Those people consume food which has not been ritually purified, and perhaps through the consumption of that food, perhaps to some extent, those people cause harm to this world in which we live. So some fairly strong language Sri Krishna uses here to encourage us to have a prayerful attitude towards the food we eat, an attitude of being grateful. Okay, much more to see in our next class. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Satgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Tat Sat.